Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Boo!
Today is October 25th, 2014, and this is episode 666. Oh, no, just 66. My bad. Halloween Horror Fest 2014. And we like to call this episode LP. That is, of course, short for Listenable Podcast, because this is a Game Buoy spotlight on Silent Hill. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy. This week, we're going to be talking about Silent Hill. So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups.
Don't you mean like
news
unbuckle
bits.
Because your car just crashed?
Anyway, in the interest of our time and your own, let's get to those follow-ups. Slaggy McWaggy, why don't you kick us off?
So, a troll is coming to a popular MMO, but it's not what you expect, because Altros will be returning in Final Fantasy XIV: A Realm Reborn. He will be appearing with Typhon in the upcoming 2.4 update.
Oh, snaps.
Part of a sub-story quest for the Amagina Cup Tournament.
And this arena is actually going to be called the Dragon's Neck Coliseum, which, for those of you who are familiar with Final Fantasy VI, from which both of these characters hail, you could encounter them in the Dragon's Neck Coliseum.
So yes.
This is perfect. You know, Altros uses the same character design that he had from his cameo in Final Fantasy XIII-2. It's just, you know, really exciting stuff. This has definitely been on my mind a lot lately, as I've been thinking about returning to Final Fantasy XIV. Something else that's been on my mind a lot while thinking about getting back into Final Fantasy XIV was the announcement of the game's first expansion.
Oh yeah, Wrath of the Lich King.
This is going to be Final Fantasy XIV Heavensward. And this is going to increase the game's level cap to 60, as well as introduce a new playable race and several brand new jobs.
Yeah, why don't you tell us about the playable job?
So far, the only job that has been announced is the Dark Knight.
Yeah, Batman!
Not that kind of Dark Knight. This is going to be a tank based on Cecil from Final Fantasy IV.
Are you sure it's not based on Arthas and his army of Lich?
The main weapon is going to be a two-handed great sword, and quite interestingly, this job will not have any base classes involved. You'll be able to just go straight to the job. And the design of the character is specifically to be both, like, a wielder of, like, bladed weapons, as well as dark magic.
No, it actually looks really cool, and I will probably give it a try.
Yeah, the character design is great, and at the Tokyo Fan Festival next month, Yoshida-san has said that he'll be showing a new class then, as well. And he made, like, a little, like, finger gun, like, hand signal.
Team YRP?
Yeah, so quite a few people are hoping that we're gonna get a Final Fantasy X-2 style gunner class.
God, I just want a dress sphere class.
Alright, well, I mean, every class in Final Fantasy XIV is practically that, given the way the job system works.
True, but I want more fashion.
We also have news here that in Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, your Palicos, which is, of course, the new form of the Phalanes, will be able to dress in Mega Man armor.
It's really cute.
Yeah, it's super cute. Super cute.
I bet Jeremy over at Koopa Club Podcast is a big fan of this. You know,
oh,
cats
gosh.
And Mega Man.
Right, it's right up his alley. We also have word here that famed Japanese character designer Hideo Minaba is going to be designing new characters for Terra Battle. Terra Battle is, of course, the mobile iOS game by
Mistwalker!
Exactly, Sakaguchi-san's studio. And you know, it's funny because this was actually for the download starters goal at 270,000 downloads. My understanding, although I don't think they've done all the announcements yet, is that this game has actually gotten past the 800,000 mark.
Wow.
So quite a few people are downloading it, quite a few people are digging it, certainly myself included, as I mentioned last week. If you haven't checked it out yet on Android or iPhone, I highly suggest you do so.
Excellent. I bet you're really excited about the Dungeon Fighter Online closed beta that's coming in March 2015.
Oh, I sure am. Neopol brought Dungeon Fighter Online back to the U.S. in English last summer for a brief alpha test. And I guess there was just really great demand, and so Neopol is going to be relaunching the game, and they're currently going to have a closed beta test in March 2015.
I'm glad you took the company name, because I've been saying it as Neopol.
You know, I mean, it could be Neopol. I've always said Neopol, and I'm not going to stop.
That's probably right.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Pre-orders for Resident Evil Revelations 2, which is the new spoopy follow-up to the 3DS classic, modern classic, will grant you raid mode stations. Will grant you raid mode stages on the PlayStation consoles. Pre-orders are now live, so if you are interested in this, you should hop on it.
Yeah, definitely. We also have some news here about some of the additional content in the Mario Kart 8 DLC. The first downloadable pack, which is due, in just a couple of weeks now, is going to feature a new motorcycle for Link. This is called Link's Master Cycle, and it looks really weird. It's like some kind of iron horse thing.
Sorry, Epona. You know, now she's outdated.
All right. He upgraded
you. It just has more
you.
Horsepower. That would be amazing if Epona was raceable in Mario Kart, though.
We also got a glimpse at another track. This one is actually going to be a returning classic track. This is Yoshi's Circuit.
Oh, cute.
Yeah. So, I'm really excited. I actually like Yoshi's Circuit a lot. And this is sort of a big deal to a lot of people because it's the first time that a classic is returning that has already been featured in multiple games.
Right.
It's not usual for these classic tracks to keep getting revisited, so a lot of people are hoping now that, basically the door's open for this DLC and DLC Pack 2 to just be anything.
Baby Park.
I will be shocked at this point if Baby Park doesn't come back.
I really like Baby Park, even though it's simple.
It's a good competitive track. We also have word here that Hearthstone is going to be releasing on the iPhone and on Android phones in early 2015.
Lovely.
Yeah. And in other really, really great news, we have word that the PC version of Dark Souls is having its games for Windows Live integration stripped out, and it will be moving to a more standard Steamworks platform.
Oh, hallelujah.
Right? We also got some cool news from Nintendo that the upcoming amiibo figure for Link that is going to be compatible with Super Smash Bros. For Wii U, as well as Super Smash Bros. For 3DS, is additionally going to be compatible with the recently released Musou game Hyrule Warriors.
Yes!
We don't yet know what the amiibo functionality in Hyrule Warriors will do, but the Link amiibo will be available alongside Super Smash Bros. For Wii U in North America on November 21st.
Yes! Fans of Dragon Quest VIII will be happy that Youngus and Jessica are coming to Dragon Quest Heroes.
Ooh!
And apparently, Koei was the one who really wanted Jessica to be in.
Surprising no one.
CEO and president of Koei Tecmo, Yuichi Arikawa, said, "I'm always getting my butt slapped by my wife, but I'd also like to try using a whip."
Whoa. Oh, man. That's enough of that.
Yeah, that's a little bit inappropriate.
We also have word here that the upcoming Halo the Master Chief Collection for Xbox One is going to have a day one patch that is going to be 20 gigs in size.
Do the do.
Frank O'Connor, the head of Halo franchise development, explained over on NeoGAF their design decision in doing this 20-gig patch. And he basically said, straight up, it's not a fix for in-game issues. It's because basically it's the entire multiplayer portion of these games. They wanted to have the full game without going on multiple discs, and it just would not have been possible to get the entire game on one disc. So they filled up one entire Blu-ray, and then, they're gonna have the rest of the game just be downloaded so that you have a seamless experience once it's downloaded. And I have to say, you know, I kind of get that, because, you know, this game, it's going to have, you know, the first four Halo games in their entirety, in HD, in several instances with upgraded texture work and stuff. And, you know, that game's, that those are a lot of games with a lot of assets.
And tons of maps.
Well, and yeah, but then the downloaded part is going to be, you know, the multiplayer game, which also includes more than 100 maps. All of the maps that have ever appeared in a Halo game in multiplayer are going to be present in this game. So when you think about that amount of content, I don't know. I think I would have preferred two discs, but I can appreciate their angle. Like, I get it. So, you know, that's cool. I'm just like, dude, my internet sucks. I do not want to have a 20 gig download on my hands if I can help it. But whatever, you know, they said that the game will be playable without that huge download, just not multiplayer. But if you're just trying to play through the campaign like midnight that night, you get it. You will be able to do that.
And, okay. those who are looking forward to the final release of Scrolls, which is the card battle game from Mojang, will be happy to know that it's planned for a late December final release.
Excellent.
It has been price dropped from $20 to $5 to be competitive with other mobile games. However, you'll be able to get a free download on iOS and kind of like a demo. You get to play several games as a dummy user.
Excellent. Okay, cool. We also have here a great deal of Smash Brothers news. You know, it's funny because we thought with the release of Smash Brothers 4 3DS, that the Smash Brothers news well would kind of dry up, but we have more news than ever. We got word from Nintendo that Smash Brothers Wii U is going to have an 8-player simultaneous mode.
Yeah.
This game, you know, it is running at 1080p, it is locked at 60 frames a second, and you'll be able to just connect 8 controllers to your Wii U for local 8-player play.
Those who were disappointed that a particular genetic cat-like psychic mutant was not part of the initial roster for Smash 4 will be happy to know that Mewtwo is coming to Super Smash Bros. Both for 3DS and Wii U as downloadable characters. So,
and even more exciting is that it's going to be a free download for anyone that owns both versions of the game.
Yes, so that's super exciting, and, you know, sets the precedent for more downloadable characters.
We also, oh right, I'm excited about that. We also got word that Smash Brothers 4 Wii U is going to have a stage builder mode.
Say what?
And unlike the stage builder mode in Smash Brawl, you're actually going to be able to use the touchscreen and stylus and draw out the level shapes and forms that you want to use. You're not going to be sort of restricted to just using like set pieces that you sort of put together. Like, you'll just be able to draw a stage and play on it. I think this is tremendously exciting. I cannot wait for this functionality. That is so exciting. Even though, you know, the first thing I'm going to do is basically recreate every stage from previous Smashes that aren't in the new one.
Well, you know, that's what people do when they're given, like, stage creation tools.
Hey, let's remake stage 1-1 from Mario Brothers in Little Big Planet.
Yeah.
Instead of Smash Run, Super Smash Brothers for Wii U is going to have a mode called the Smash Tour. This is a Mario Party-style board game played as a Smash Brothers game. So I'm super excited about that. I think it sounds super fun. I just cannot wait to play.
Yeah, that's like just a special bonus. Super Smash Bros. For Wii U will have a photo mode. You can pose the character trophies that you've earned and take pictures in the game's photo studio mode. For example, Zale from The Last Story is holding some super spicy curry that is being handed to him from Master Hand. No, you mustn't let that curry lure you in.
That was Sakurai-san's post that he, you know, made when he uploaded this image. And, you know, there's a couple of cool pieces of information here. First off, that's really cool. I love the idea of, like, having, like, a photo diorama mode where you get to, like, pose your trophies and make little scenes. But also, you know, we have word that we're going to have trophies from The Last Story. And in the background of this image, there's trophies from Fatal Frame.
Right.
So, I mean, this game, man.
Oh,
it just
Fatal Frame with, like, a bunch
bigger.
Of booze.
What?
I want to do a Fatal Frame posing with, like, a bunch of booze.
Oh, booze. I thought you meant, like, beverage, like, alcohol
drinks. I didn't say dead or alive.
Ah!
I imagine that they'd like to booze it up on their, you know, their jet skis and on the beach.
Right.
Pop up in some Corona.
And to wrap these follow-ups up, let's cut to some release dates.
Guilty Geared Xrd Sign, December 16th, North America.
Woo! Oh, I cannot wait. We also have the announcement of a sequel to last year's Halo Spartan Assault. This one is Halo Spartan Strike, and it's going to be available on Windows 8 devices and Steam on December 12th for $6.
And on October 30th, there will be some wonderful gems on the Wii U and 3DS Virtual Console. First up, Wii U Virtual Console will be getting Kirby Nightmare and Dream Land, the GBA remake of the original Kirby game.
And even more exciting, that same day, we have word that we are going to be getting uploaded to the eShop for Virtual Console Gargoyle's Quest 2, The Demon Darkness for the NES game, which will be available on Wii U and 3DS. And even more exciting to me, I am finally getting my re-release of the Super Nintendo classic Demon's Crest.
Oh, did you say that Demon's Crest is getting a Virtual Console re-release?
Yes!
Oh, you mean just the game that's like one of your top five of all time?
Oh, yeah, this is probably my top number one of all time.
Oh,
and
so,
you know,
yeah.
I talk about this game on the show like every week in some context.
So your favorite game of all time is being finally released for Wii U Virtual Console?
Yes.
I'm surprised you're not more excited sounding.
How could that be?
Okay, to be fair, when this news broke, like, you were all over Twitter about it.
Yes, darn right I was. We also have word that the retro throwback style JRPG, Pure Solar, is going to be hitting the eShop for Wii U on November 6th.
Yeah, I never realized that was originally a Sega Genesis homebrew game.
Yeah, it's actually pretty exciting.
Oh, speaking about the Coronas and beach volleyball and jet skis, Dead or Alive 5 Last Round is coming on February 17th, 2015.
Excellent. You know, something that's really cool about this is that PlayStation 4 will be getting Dead or Alive 5 Last Round Core Fighters, very similar to what we saw released on the last-gen consoles. It's like a test drive version of the game featuring four fighters, and you can purchase additional characters and modes or a la carte as you want them.
Nice! And last but certainly not least, Tekken 7 is coming to Japanese arcades in February 2015. They recently did the location test, and if you want just the board that's going to net you about 1.2 million yen, if you want one with the Mishima design, I'm not really sure what that's referring to.
It's a character.
Okay, so it's just like a design of the cabinet?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. That'll net you about 1.6, almost 1.7 million yen.
Cost you.
So, yeah. Yeah, that is, of course, in American money, like $11,000 to $16,000. So this is for arcade owners, or very rich people.
Alright, well, with all that having been said, it's time to go out with the old and in with the new in a little segment we call...
News. Oh my god, news. Ouya and Fire TV better watch their glass, because Google has revealed the $99 Nexus Player game console and controller. It is a set-top box and video game console compatible with thousands of Android apps, and it has a 1.8 gigahertz quad-core Intel Atom processor, a gigabyte of RAM, 8 gigs of storage space, and will support Netflix and Hulu and such in 1080p.
Nice!
That launches on November 3rd. Pre-orders are now available.
And Google is going to be releasing a twin-stick controller for it, priced separately at $39. So they're, you know, clearly trying to make this like a direct competitor to all of these little Android TV game devices. Sort of the difference is that, you know, this is Google doing this. So that's a big deal.
Yep. PlayStation is heading to Vegas on December 6th and 7th for the PlayStation Experience. Isn't that what they called the theater experience too?
I thought they did, but...
That must be like their new...
Actually, I think that was the PlayStation Theater Experience.
So the experience must be their new, like, buzz phrase or whatever. Anyway, this is going to be an event with hands-on game time panels with developers and announcements. Actually, it sounds really cool. I wish I could go.
Yeah, you know, this is a fan event. One thing that's weird about it is that tickets are going to cost money. But still, you know, if you're a big Sony fan, it might be worth going to Vegas and checking it out. I don't know that either of us are going to make it out, but if you do, please, you know, hit us up. Let us know what you thought.
You can be our Vegas correspondent.
Ooh, right. You could be an honorary shipmate.
Hey.
We also have word here that Furyu is going to be developing a 3DS game based on the hit manga and anime Terraformars. This is, of course, the super violent anime series that is kind of been in the nerd news a little bit for the fact that giant portions of it, which have been streamed for the U.S. audience, are censored by gigantic black bars covering more than half of the screen at times. So, you know, super violent, super, like, grim and gritty. If you want to watch human beings getting torn apart by giant alien cockroaches, this is the series and game for you.
Oh. I freaked out when I saw a cockroach the other day that was normal size, so maybe not for me.
Ooh, girl, you need to clean your bathroom. We also have word that DC Comics is going to be doing a comic book series based on the upcoming Mortal Kombat X.
Oh, that game. Sounds like a fruitful partnership.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm, you know, kind of looking forward to this. I don't know that I really care insofar as, you know, LOL Mortal Kombat lore. But, you know, I like comic books, I like Mortal Kombat, so I'll check it out.
McFarlane Toys is going to be making an action figure of Clementine from The Walking Dead Season 2. Interestingly, it will be available in clean and bloody versions.
Oh, apparently it's going to be releasing quote-unquote soon. McFarlane is taking his cues from Blizzard these days, it would seem.
Apparently so.
We also have news that Nintendo has released yet another Pokemon-themed game on iOS. This time we have a minigame game collection called Camp Pokemon.
It sounds like a movie, or like one of the little shorts for the movie.
Right, it's like Pikachu's Summer Vacation.
Exactly.
The game is free to download on iPad, iPhone, and iPod Touch, and it's sort of geared at a sort of a youth audience, where, you know, the kids who are basically going to be happy getting, you know, little in-game prizes of like stickers and pins that they get to collect and trade with their friends. In somewhat surprising news, Metallica has been announced as the band at BlizzCon 2014.
Interesting. Well, you know, level whatever Elite Tauren Chieftains. I guess they're 100 now.
Oh, they probably would be.
I wonder if they'll level up this year, but yeah, they've always been super, middle, so.
Excellent. Microsoft has announced a USB adapter to use the Xbox One Kinect on your Windows 8 or 8.1 PC.
Nice.
The adapter is going to be $50, and they're also updating the Kinect SDK to Kinect SDK 2.0 for free. This will allow indie developers to start creating games taking advantage of the advanced hardware in the Xbox One Kinect. I'm looking really, really, really forward to what this means for games such as Perfect Woman.
Yes. In a surprising tidbit of news, the PS2 game that many would consider a classic of the console,
maybe not us,
Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, is going to be coming to Xbox 360. It'll have 720p resolution and enhanced draw distance.
Did you say revolution?
720p resolution and enhanced draw distance.
Woohoo! All right, well, I think that's it for our news this week, but sadly, we do have a little bit of
doom and gloom.
You know, it pains my heart to say this, but unfortunately, we have word that last week, Carbine Studios, whom you're probably most familiar with their recent title Wildstar, has had to lay off a significant portion of their employees. Word in the rumor mill is that upwards of 60 employees were let go.
That spells nothing good for Wildstar.
Yeah, I'm really bummed to hear this. I played Wildstar briefly. I got a 7-day trial, and it was fun. It wasn't really my favorite MMO, you know, between FF14 and WoW. It just didn't do enough new for me to be really into it.
Yep.
But I'm still really, really sorry to hear this. And as always, of course, our hearts and thoughts go out to everyone whose employment was impacted by this unfortunate turn of events. Slaggy, I hear you have a piece of news for us, too.
Yeah, and some, I guess, bittersweet news is more of the way to look at this. Jade Raymond, who, of course, is best known for her work with Ubisoft on titles like Watch Dogs, Splinter Cell Blacklist, and, of course, her instrumental role in the Assassin's Creed series during its better days, has left Ubisoft to pursue other ambitions and new opportunities. So it was a, sounds like a friendly departure, and, you know, we're hoping that Ubisoft Toronto will, you know, land on their feet without the leadership of Jade, and that she will, you know, continue to put out some great stuff.
Absolutely. Our hearts and thoughts go out with you, girl. Hope everything goes smooth. All right, well, with all of this having been said, I think it's time to talk a little bit about Silent Hill.
Is that the fog rolling in? Oh, I made that joke last week.
So, Silent Hill. You know, this is kind of a tricky game to talk about, or a tricky series to talk about. Because, you know, I love this series, but I'm not the world's biggest Silent Hill fan just by virtue of how intense Silent Hill fans are. Silent Hill is one of those series that if you love Silent Hill, you fucking love it. Yeah, we have some listeners who are super into this series. You know, some of the Hunty Bunch podcasters are super into this series. So, yeah, the fans of this series, they're just obsessed. They know every nook and cranny of every game in this series. They know all, like, who directed what, who did what art assets, who composed what songs. So we're going to do our best here. Obviously, if you have any insight, you think we missed some interesting tidbits, by all means, we implore you to let us know. Tweet at us, hashtag GameBuoy Extra.
GameBuoy Extra.
You know, what did we miss about Silent Hill? For the rest of you, of course, hopefully we can share the love of this game that we have and maybe interest you in trying it out. You know, there are quite a few games in this series that are still really easy to get a hold of copies of and even play them on current-ish gen consoles. So you can definitely get into this wonderful, wonderful series. Before we talk about any game specifically, though, I want to talk a little bit about sort of the overview of this series. I want to talk a little bit about some of the themes, about some of, like, the series' strengths and hallmarks, what it's known for, as well as some of the recurring motifs. Slagkick, my understanding is that in preparation for this episode, you played a couple of Silent Hill games.
I have played a few Silent Hill games.
So, what can you tell me? Why don't you tell me a recurring motif in the series that you find interesting?
I mean, I think that it's based a lot more on atmosphere than, you know, Konami. This was Konami's answer to Resident Evil, so it's very different in its presentation, I think, that, you know, it's a lot more atmospheric, it's very, like, puzzle-based, it's, like, a lot more focused on, like, the psychological aspects than monsters.
That was the exact word I was hoping you were gonna get to, and that is psychological. You know, something that's really cool about Silent Hill is what it does in terms of storytelling. So, the general concept, and this is true for most of the games in the series, is that, you know, these otherwise ordinary people whom you might at first blush think of as innocent citizens, you know, wander into a place, Silent Hill, that is connected to a kind of other world, sometimes referred to as the other world. And typically the other world is where creeptacular, spooky stuff happens. But unlike something like Resident Evil or Clock Tower, the horrors in Silent Hill almost always are dark reflections of secrets you're keeping from the world around you, as well as yourself. You know, and I'm not going to say too much for fear of spoilers, but I would say the most well-known monster in the Silent Hill series, Pyramid Head. Pyramid Head from Silent Hill 2, is in fact a manifestation of, let's just say, negative feelings about a bad thing Homeboy once did. So, really, in a lot of ways, you know, Silent Hill is often considered sort of more of like a thinking man's survival horror game. And you can really see that in the smash hit craze PT. You may remember the entire internet was all aflutter about PT and how twisted it was and how creepy the atmosphere was and about how, you know, the game had like this really cool organically told story that was basically about some really awful things happening inside this house you're repeating. Which, you know, obviously absolutely keeps with the spirit, or spirits as the case may be, of Silent Hill. So, you know, we have this really creepy, unpleasant, atmospheric experience that's elevated by music by Akira Yamaoka in most cases. And, you know, his score for this, Akira Yamaoka, really just incredibly talented man. His score was for many, 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 many years, his score for the first three Silent Hills in particular, really viewed as like a highlight of music in video games and what music in games can accomplish and achieve. So I want to talk now specifically a little bit about the first Silent Hill.
That's an interesting development story.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll get to that in just one second. This game was actually released in North America before it was released in Japan. You know, this game was very specifically designed by Konami to be like a competitor to Resident Evil, and very specifically meant to be... Like, you know, it's really supposed to appeal to American gamers that wanted a horror experience. Which is a big part of why, the setting of Silent Hill is so very specifically, like, you know, just like an American town.
Yeah, like small town, Americana.
Exactly. So, Slaggy, you were saying that you had an interesting dev story on this game?
Oh yeah, just that it was kind of, you know, it started development in 1996 during a time when Konami was, I believe, going through a shift in management. And so, you know, they wanted this huge Hollywood sort of production to appeal to Western gamers. But, you know, Team Silent, who, you know, was responsible for the first couple Silent Hills, was, you know, kind of at a crossroads. They wanted to, you know, be true to their artistic vision. And eventually they just ignored Konami's original plans and kept true to their vision, and I mean, I think it paid off.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then, you know, also just the role of Takayoshi Sato-san, you know, who was later, you know, played a prominent role in, you know, at least I know he was really involved in Silent Hill 2, which a lot of people, you know, consider to be the best in the series, but, you know, he was just working, like, at a low level. I think he was designing the fonts, I believe, like, for the UI. But he, in his, you know, spare time, did, like, 3D demos and was trying to, you know, share that knowledge with the older staff members. But Konami was going to refuse to credit him for the work he was doing. So he made these, like, really impressive tech demos and showed them to Konami. And they're like, oh, wow, these are great. But then he threatened to withhold his knowledge and skill set if they didn't credit him. So he kind of had to fight for, you know, a role in taking a bigger part in this game.
And, you know, in order to get that huge role, he ended up creating the full motion videos in the game all by himself.
After hours.
For about 2.5 years, he actually lived in the studio that they were making this game in.
That sounds like it would be a great setting for a, like, New Nightmare sort of thing.
Oh my gosh, right?
Silent Hill, Silent Studio.
Oh my goodness, I would totally play that.
What happens when Takayoshi Sato-san sleeps in the Konami building?
And you know, of course, the music was done by Akira Yamaoka, as we sort of discussed. He actually specifically wanted to join the development staff and work on the music after the original composer that they had ended up dropping out of the game. Yamaoka-san did not watch the game scenes. He was actually very specifically kind of removed from the game element, and he largely based his compositions on the sounds of Twin Peaks. But he specifically went with going with, like, industrial music because he wanted the music in the game specifically to feel inorganic.
Mm-hmm.
When he first presented the songs that he did for this game, several of the staffers actually thought that the game was bugging out and glitching on them. Like, they didn't realize that was the actual music he had put together for the game.
Wow, yeah. And you mentioning Twin Peaks, like, that makes me think of one of the primary influences, which is, of course, David Lynch and his work Twin Peaks and, you know, his other various films and such. And, you know, there's a lot of inspiration from throughout the series from, like, horror literature and also things like Alice in Wonderland, The Lost World was a particular influence on this specific game. So it's just, you know, it's very much intentionally made to, you know, draw from a lot of these, you know, different cultural milestones, I guess you could say. Not maybe milestones, but, you know,
I follow what you're saying, like touchstones.
Touchstones.
You know, so this game was originally released on the PlayStation 1. It has gotten a PlayStation PS1 Classics release for PlayStation 3, PlayStation Portable, and PlayStation Vita. Though obviously it's worth mentioning that this is one of those tricky games that in order to put it on your Vita, you have to download it on your PS3
yep.
and then transfer it to your Vita, which is always irritating.
Yeah, fix that please, Sony.
Well, I assume it has something to do with the rights from Konami. They probably would have to resubmit it or some nonsense. It was also adapted as a film, which, you know, actually did pretty well back in 2006.
Yeah.
Also called Silent Hill. It is largely based on the first Silent Hill game, but it does incorporate elements from Silent Hills 2, 3, and 4.
Huh.
Most specifically 2. And if you've seen the movie, you already know we're talking about Pyramid Head.
Yeah.
Something else that was actually really cool was that the movie's score did include music by Yamaoka-san.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, actually, I really enjoyed that movie. I saw it with some members of the Hunty Bunch way, way, way back, obviously in 2006, in the theater, and I still have very pleasant memories of this movie. I haven't watched it in a few years, but
pleasant
I really
or
liked
unpleasant?
It. Very pleasant.
Oh.
And we'll talk about the movie probably a little bit more toward the end of this episode. But I also wanted to mention, you know, that it has had a reimagining in the form of Silent Hill Shattered Memories.
Yes.
This is, of course, a loose adaptation. But, you know, it actually takes a lot of the story elements in wildly different directions.
Mm.
We've talked about Shattered Memories quite a few times over the years here on the show, but we'll probably talk a little bit more about it a little bit later on.
Yeah.
Slaggy, my understanding is that this is one of the games that you played. Why don't you talk to me a little bit about what you thought of Silent Hill as a game?
Well, you know, I think the biggest obstacle for me was trying to work with the tank controls. Like, you know, you had explained to me that that was kind of something that was very much a trademark of those early survival horror games.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of games working in 3D spaces for the first time had growing pains with regards to controls.
So that was a bit of a challenge to overcome. But, you know, otherwise, I mean, I see a lot of really interesting design. I don't want to say design choices. I mean, I guess the design choices, but like, you know, for example, the fact that they use the fog and kind of like the grainy, like, quality to enhance the mood, but also to kind of just like deal with the technical limitations. Like, I thought that was a really clever, you know, I guess that would have been a design choice, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it was a great design choice to turn a hardware weakness into, like a feature almost. You know, very similar to what Acclaim did back in the day on the Nintendo 64 using the fog in Turok Dinosaur Hunter to hide pop-in. It worked to much lesser advantage in that case. In the case of Silent Hill, it is just perfect. It creates atmosphere and hides a sort of ugly technical limitation. It's really quite forward thinking.
And, you know, I think the other thing that really kind of jumped out to me was it was just perfect timing revisiting Silent Hill after doing our last episode, because it really made me realize how much of the, like, adventure game genre and, like, those elements and the, like, puzzle solving and, you know, that sort of thing really did have an influence on, you know, later games like Silent Hill. And, you know, I almost kind of think, and it's my understanding that I think, is it Silent Hill 4, The Room kind of has more,
yes,
like, of, like, more of a traditional adventure game sort of interaction interface, I guess, say.
I would say that about The Room, yes.
And, you know, it also kind of it made me think that if it had more of an interface like that, you know, I think that actually sounds more appealing to me personally, just because the tank controls really were a challenge for me. I'd say they honestly detracted a little bit.
Yeah, you know, and that's something I kind of forget, is that you were coming to this from a 2014 perspective. And, you know, this is an older game. I played it back in 1999. I didn't even have a PlayStation of my own yet. I was playing it on someone else's. And, you know, it's actually interesting. Something I just learned while researching for this episode is that apparently if you're playing with a DualShock controller, as Harry Mason gets damaged, the protagonist of the game, apparently, the DualShock controller will start to, like, thump like a heartbeat that will speed up as you take more damage. Which just sounds terrifying.
Oh, you weren't playing on a DualShock?
No, this was my buddy that had this game did not have a DualShock, he just had, like, a PlayStation 1 controller.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you have to, like, this game, man, so old, it's 15 years old now.
Ooh.
Right? Like, if this game were a person, it would be out there underage drinking and being awful.
In the other world.
In the other world. You know, you might notice we're going out of our way to avoid talking about the story. And that's really a choice.
Have you seen my daughter?
I think that one of the real fun things about Silent Hill is that each game is sort of, of the good Silent Hills, each game, it's sort of like a mystery, like an adventure game that unfolds as you play it. And, you know, I often talk about how I'm not super interested in story in games. But in this specific case, the Silent Hill games, the story is a huge part of what makes these games amazing. So I don't want to talk too much about it. You know, the game, you play as Harry Mason. He's looking for his missing adopted daughter in Silent Hill. There's a whole story with, you know, a cult and some deities. And I don't want to talk too much about the specifics. It's just, it's really creepy. It has multiple endings, several of which are really awesome. And some of which are just hilarious, which is another hallmark of the series. The series is known for having silly
endings.
Well,
not in this one, but I mean the dog ending, that was two, right?
I think so. I think there might be a couple dog endings. There are also several alien endings. There's a furry bunny ending.
Oh, you know, and I actually, now I remember, I was reading up on this. Some of the joke endings end up being, like, combined, so there was some joke endings in some of the later games that have the dog and the alien together.
Oh my goodness. But yeah, I like Silent Hill. I think the first game is probably still fun. I haven't played it in a few years, but you know, I really enjoyed it at the time quite a bit. And something I liked about it more than I liked Resident Evil was that I felt like there wasn't nearly as much of a combat focus. Which my understanding is that was actually a design decision. They felt
he was kind
Harry,
of meant to be an everyman.
Well, yeah, they felt like Harry was not going to be like a police officer in a zombie-infested town or, you know, like a Resident Evil situation. This is just a dude looking for his daughter, no combat training. You're just going to pick up weapons that you find, makeshift weapons, and search this incredibly creepy town that occasionally, you know, burns around you. So, you know, we definitely recommend you check this out. This definitely gets, like, a Gamebuie Gold Star seal of approval, if such a thing exists.
Yeah, and I mean, considering for its time what it accomplished, I think is what you have to keep in mind. Like I said, it's difficult for me to get around the controls, but I have to appreciate what it did artistically.
Yeah, and I don't even have that reservation. I think if you're willing to sort of tough it out and really devote a little bit of time, I think that this game has abundant rewards for your patience. So, let's move on, of course, to the most loved game in this series, hands down. I'm talking, of course, about Silent Hill 2. Now, this game has a pretty interesting release history. You know, it was originally released for the PlayStation 2, but it got ports for the Xbox and Windows PC platforms, and more recently was a part of the Silent Hill HD collection, which is generally considered to be a subpar port, but, you know, especially after being patched a little bit, at least the game works and you can play through it. And this game is in pretty much every way like the first Silent Hill, but bigger and better. You play in Silent Hill 2, the main character is James Sunderland, and he is searching for his deceased wife. And, you know, again, that's all we're gonna say. He ends up in Silent Hill, and, you know, a lot of the same awful things start happening. We mentioned, you know, Pyramid Head is in this game, and something at the time that really a lot of people talked about, and I remember, you know, this game was on a lot of games critics' Game of the Year lists back when it released in 2001. And something that a lot of people were really big on was the fact that, you know, some of the topics in this game are really, like, crazy. Like, the whole game is just built on metaphor, and, like, really, like, unflinchingly honest discussions of, like, really taboo topics. It had just an absolutely insane score by Akira Yamaoka-san. It's an amazing game. Slaggy, what are your experiences with Silent Hill 2?
I actually never played Silent Hill 2, so You know, I really think I should give it a chance.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. I would definitely recommend it. Obviously, if you have to play on a console, then the only way you're really going to be able to probably is to pick up the HD collection. I might also suggest you look into the into the PC port, though.
That's true. That's a good point.
It is unfortunately not presently available on any of the big games services, but my understanding is that if you can get a hold of a disc copy, it actually still installs perfectly fine, and the community has actually hacked the game to mod it, to add in, like, widescreen support.
Oh, nice.
To restore all of the, like, film grain filters that were in the original PlayStation 2 release but were removed from the Xbox release, original PC release, and HD port releases. Are actually, to me, like, I don't understand how you would have the game without that. I mean, it's such a unique and cool touch. I definitely would recommend you look into that. And this game is, it's so, such an intense experience. The story is just incredible. I don't actually want to say a single thing about it. Like, I already feel like I spoiled too much by talking about Pyramid Head earlier. Like, let me put it that way. Like, this game is insane. You know, it's the kind of game that a lot of people even still call their favorite game of all time.
We can say that it was inspired by Crime and Punishment by Fyodor Dostoevsky, whose name I can never...
Dostoevsky?
Thank you. I can never say his name correctly.
Fair enough. And, you know, this is another one where, you know, it kind of had, like, some interesting development issues. This game was largely developed because some of the people who made the first game wanted to make another, but, primarily because Konami, you know, the first game was a success. They made a lot of money on it, and Konami wanted more of that money, honey. So, you know, basically, the people who had worked on the first game and wanted to do a sequel started to sort of hunker down and look at, you know, how they could make a creepier game. And using the PlayStation 2 in ways that I still don't really understand, because flat out, you know, in some parts of this game, it still looks so good that it's like, how is this a PlayStation 2 game? They basically had a little team of, like, 30 to 50 people making the game, and immediately, like, I guess they dug into the game's story and decided to write the story before making any of the actual game. Which, you know, you didn't see a lot back then, even in these kinds of games, which are primarily narrative. So, you know, it was a big change in the way they made the game, but it really makes sense when you consider that most people love this game for its story. You know, that was a huge, huge, huge part of the game's appeal was the story, and it really shows that was the focus of the team from step one. And Akira Yamaoka, in doing the music for this game, so he this time wanted to evoke emotion from the player. He wanted to sort of use music to connect the player to the game more intimately. And he went so far as to sort of, like, design music without even thinking specifically about, like, melodies and stuff. Like, he specifically just wanted to use arrangements of tones that would make people, like, just have feelings. Like, oh, this is a series of sad notes. Be sad. And it, you know, it sounds really bad, but, when you actually play the game, it works so well. And, you know, he also very specifically included, like, long periods of silence in certain songs, just to specifically sort of mess with the player's perception of what they were hearing in sync with what they were seeing. So he really was very thought forward in terms of not just trying to make good music, but trying to really contribute to the unsettling atmosphere of the game. Slaggy, unless you have anything else to say about Silent Hill 2, because it's such an easy game for people to get their hands on, what with the HD collection and everything, and with how much of the game would be spoiled by spoiling the plot, I think I'm inclined to just go to the next game.
Let's do it.
So, Silent Hill 3 is pretty interesting, because it is a direct sequel to Silent Hill 1. You play the game as Heather Mason, who is the teenage girl, of course, that Harry Mason from the first game raised. And the story and the horrors presented in the game definitely keep the perspective of being psychological horror from the perspective of a teenage girl. This game was originally released in May of 2003 for the PlayStation 2, It also got ports to the Microsoft Windows PC platform.
And it's interesting that it got a European release first, because a lot of these games had a lot of issues censorship-wise, where they had changes had to be made to certain monsters. So it's interesting that this one released about 6 weeks or so ahead of its Japanese release.
Yes, and this is the other game in the Silent Hill HD collection. And, you know, something that was really a big deal at the time was that this game had a difficulty setting for both the combat and the puzzles independently.
Yeah, the hard puzzles had Shakespeare elements.
So the most commonly cited change in the difficulty levels of the puzzles, because this is a really easy one to sort of point out, is that, most of the puzzles on medium are very straightforward, pattern recognition, find this key, find the right keyhole kind of stuff. But like the hard difficulty puzzles, as Slackick was saying, straight up, you would need to know Shakespeare plays and actual real old school adventure game style. Like, who could possibly know all of this stuff in order to get through the game?
I kind of want to try.
And of course, playing with the combat on hard also for the first time made one of the Silent Hill games a little bit more combat focused. Silent Hill 2, much like Silent Hill 1, was again not super combat focused. It did give you more combat options than its predecessor, and Silent Hill 3 took another step down that road. The combat, of course, is still not as pronounced as you might see in something like Resident Evil, but, they gave Heather, block abilities and, quick dodges. So, they definitely tried to sort of make the game not just more appealing to a wider audience, but also to sort of give the player more agency in how to deal with these monster encounters when they happen. Now, something that's really interesting about Silent Hill 3 is that it was actually developed simultaneously with Silent Hill 4 The Room.
Oh, that's right.
Silent Hill 3, of course, was created by Team Silent, which was, of course, the production group within Konami Computer Entertainment Tokyo, that also did Silent Hill 1 and 2, and The Room was done with members of the same team, so it wasn't a completely different team doing it, but, it was sort of like a split down the middle with, half of Team Silent working on 3 while, a smaller group of, I guess I shouldn't say half, but, a large portion of Team Silent working on 3 while other people were working on Silent Hill 4. And, so Silent Hill 4 was sort of specifically going to be a different direction for the franchise, as Slackick was saying earlier, it's a different style of game. And so in a lot of ways, at the time, Silent Hill was being designed as let's take Silent Hill 1 and 2 and take the next step on each level. Which is why, you have the combat elements enhanced, you have the puzzle elements enhanced, the exploration elements are enhanced. So, this game was really well received at the time of its release, and this is actually the game that Silent Hill Revelation is loosely based on. This is, of course, the second Silent Hill movie. I don't expect that we'll be saying too much about Silent Hill Revelation. It's, in my opinion, not a very good movie. But it's also not, completely awful. It's just not very good. The Silent Hill 3 is a good game. It has great music. I effing love the music in Silent Hill 3. And it actually had a vocal song.
Oh yeah, You're Not Here.
Yeah, You're Not Here, which is, I think, one of the main themes that people remember from this series. As an interesting bit of trivia, that song also popped up in Dance Dance Revolution Extreme for the PlayStation 2. It was used in the first Silent Hill movie as well. And again, it's a great song. The music in this game is so good. And, once again, much like Silent Hill 2, I don't want to spoil this game. It's so easy to play. Much like Silent Hill 2, the PC version still installs off a disc and runs right off. And much like the second game, it has, a community that has done great work in terms of modding it to run like a current game. And this was actually, this game was probably responsible for me personally not being super wowed by the next generation of consoles from this, the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, because Silent Hill 3 looks damn good.
Yeah.
When you see it in screenshots, it's like, okay, this looks all right. But in motion, it's just like, damn, I cannot believe this is a PS2 game. So next up, of course, is Silent Hill 4 The Room. This game released in 2004. So, you know, just like a year later, this one launched on the PlayStation 2, Xbox, and PC Windows platforms. And in Japan, it's actually been released as a PS2 classic for PS3.
Oh.
So hopefully we'll get that here someday. As far as I'm concerned, all of these games should be getting PS2 classics releases. So Silent Hill 4 is a really, really different game. Like Slaggy was saying, it's unlike the other games, it's primarily played in the first-person perspective. Which is, of course, you're in the room, which is Henry Townshend's apartment. And, you know, you spend most of your time in the room, and, you know, you're playing like an agoraphobic guy. You're stuck in the room, but you don't really want to be in the room. You're looking outside of, like, the peephole of your door and through, like, cracks in the door and cracks in the wall that may form. Very similar to a lot of the concepts in PT now that I'm talking about it and thinking it through. I'm like, wow, a lot of the things I did in PT, I also had done previously in Silent Hill 4 The Room. There was a very, very basic combat series, but something that's actually really interesting is that there was also not a lot of, like, complex puzzles. Most of the puzzles were more of, like, the simple, like, fetch quests and find the right item for the right trigger. And, you know, it's funny because I remember at the time hearing the developers say that this was going to be, like, the most interesting combat in a Resident Evil to date.
Well, there were the ghosts.
But yeah, I mean, I actually did not think that there were very many. I didn't think that the combat was very interesting. I actually found myself running from every combat that I possibly could when playing this game. Something that I love about this game is, of course, you know, in the second half of the game, ghosts start coming into the room, which previously had been a safe space. And after that point, spooky stuff starts happening. It starts following him, and he has to, you know, escape the room through cracks and stuff, which is actually terrifying when you play it.
That sounds terrifying.
This game is really, really, really creepy.
And this game did not have a joke ending, from what I understand.
I'm not that surprised to hear that, because, again, the game actually gets really, really, really dark. In fact, in some ways, I was shocked when I first saw this game being played. My first time through this game, I was actually just watching someone else play. And I actually became so hooked that I went and picked up the game myself like a week later and played all the way through it in one sitting. Something which at the time was not very common, as I had really bad gamer ADD at that time.
At that time?
No, I mean, I'm a lot better now. Like, you look at stuff...
IT.
You look at stuff like Fantasy Life. I just got that, like, 2 days ago. I'm already, what, like, 4 hours in. Anyway, this is not Fantasy Life Buoy.
Fantasy Buoy.
It is sort of Silent Hill Buoy. You know, this one was developed by Team Silent alongside Silent Hill 3, as we say. They had the intention of creating a new style of Silent Hill game. You know, since Slagkick, who is a relative newcomer to the series, he picked up on that right away himself in reviewing these games, I think it's probably fair to say that they succeeded.
And this is kind of where we're getting to the end of the golden era of the series, wouldn't you say?
I think that's probably a fair thing to say. You know, unfortunately right now, your best bet to play Silent Hill 4 The Room is probably just the PC release. But unlike the other Silent Hill PC ports, this one does not just run super smooth. There are hacks and mods to play it and to get it to run. But currently, the best way to play this game, if you're trying to play it, would probably be to try and track down a cheap copy for PS2 and maybe, like, emulate that if you have a good enough computer. Because it's definitely worth playing. I think it's a great experience. If your only exposure to Silent Hill as a series so far is PT, then this is probably the next logical step toward getting you into this series, would be Silent Hill 4 The Room.
No relation to The Room, the terror movie.
And once
again... You're tearing me apart, Lisa!
And, oh man, have you been sitting on that all day?
Yes.
yeah, I would, once again, you know, some of the most interesting parts of this game are in the story, and that's really sort of a theme that you see with these original original Silent Hill games, sort of the core games that are so well loved. They had a lot of attention and to put into the stories over put into them as games. And while I normally begrudge that, in this case, that really was for the better. We now have to skip forward a few years and look at Silent Hill Origins. This was a Silent Hill game made for the PlayStation Portable initially. It did eventually get a PS2 port, and that PS2 port is available in the EU and UK territories as a PS2 classic. This is actually chronologically the first game in the Silent Hill series, which you probably got from the fact that it's titled Origins. And it takes place before the first game. Gameplay actually uses a third-person perspective, and it highly emphasizes combat. It does also, of course, emphasize exploration and puzzle-solving, but I would say this was the first game that was really sort of combat-focused first.
Yeah, I know in my research about it, they looked to Resident Evil 4 as a kind of a guide, which, when it was trying to distinguish itself from Resident Evil, probably not the best decision.
Yeah, and this game, as I recall, and admittedly, you know, I have not played this game since it first came out for the PSP back in 2007. I seem to recall there being a lot more of, like, switching between the other world and the real world, sort of as, like, a mechanic in the game. Like, a lot more of a focus on that than in the other games. A lot of, like, oh, find an item in one world and then take it into the other world.
You know, the development of this one was really weird, because are you familiar with the weird development story of this?
Oh, why don't you tell me as if I wasn't?
So it was originally, it was originally planned to be a dark comedy inspired by the television show Scrubs. But then, Climax Studios, who worked on this, they were
UK-based. And this is not the Japanese Climax Studios that you might be thinking. Continue.
Right, this is Climax Studios. They were a British studio, and they got this. They're like, can we change this? And Konami let them change it to make it a lot more darker and truer Silent Hill experience.
Yeah, and you know, for the most part, people generally felt like they succeeded. You know, the emphasis on action and combat to a greater degree than the other games, it really did sort of mimic what we saw happen with the Resident Evil series as well. But at the same time, you know, there were some really creepy creeps in this game, which was very cool. And, you know, again, at least at this point, the story is still pretty good. You know, there was more music by Akira Yamaoka, which was great, as always. There were actually several vocal tracks with Mary Elizabeth McGlynn doing vocals. She was the one, who, of course, who sang You're Not Here, which, you know, from Silent Hill 3, which we were ranting and raving about. And, you know, overall, I would say that Origins, it's interesting to think about as almost like an alternative fourth game for the Silent Hill series. Unfortunately, you know, while the storyline is generally pretty good, it does lack subtlety. You know, whereas the previous four games were very interesting, they're very layered, there's a lot of texture in their stories, and I know that, you know, I guess we're sort of failing in this episode since we're not talking about those stories. This game, Silent Hill Origins, which was actually released in Japan as Silent Hill Zero, which I didn't know until just a few weeks ago. Unfortunately, it was really heavy-handed with its sort of themes and what it was trying to say. You know, the other games had a very cautious, careful hand, and as a result, they were able to sort of deal with some themes that were really adult and taboo and inappropriate for games in the eyes of many. Whereas Silent Hill Origins, we started to see sort of the first bits of, like, let's be edgy for the sake of edgy in the Silent Hill series. All right, well, after a brief interruption, we are back. The next game here to talk about is Silent Hill Homecoming.
Oh my god, are you the Homecoming Queen?
This is the sixth installment of the Silent Hill series, and this was actually developed by Double Helix.
It was.
We've talked a lot about Double Helix over the last couple of years. You're probably familiar with their work on Front Mission Evolved, Killer Instinct, and Strider.
Yep.
In addition to this game.
And then being bought by Amazon.
So Silent Hill Homecoming was actually initially announced as Silent Hill 5. Of course, you know, being the sixth game, but, you know, we were just talking about Silent Hill Zero. So this was Silent Hill 5. And this game was released for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, as well as for Microsoft Windows. Something that's interesting about this is that, having been released on Windows in 2008, it was released on Steam.
Oh.
And it's actually still available on Steam to this day. Although, for reasons I will probably never understand, it is $40. But, you know, it's probably worth discussing. This is another game that is sort of more of a Resident Evil 4 style action horror game.
Well, you control a special forces soldier, so yeah, bro.
But something that's interesting is that for the first time in the series, you have like a dialogue wheel in this game.
Oh.
And so you have, you know, options in how you respond to NPCs in the game. Obviously, how you respond does impact the flow of the story and some of the big tricks and sequences that occur.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is the best Silent Hill in the Citadel. No, I'm kidding.
You know, much like as we've talked on previous episodes about how Shattered Memories did some interesting stuff in that space as well. Of course, this is, as we noted, by far the most combat-heavy of the Silent Hills up to this point. But, you know, at least that is taking into account that the main character, Alex Shepard, is a soldier. So, you know, you have...
I guess he would have been a Commander Shepard.
I thought that was the joke you were making.
No, I was just making a Mass Effect joke with the dialogue wheel.
So Commander Shepard ended up in Silent Hill on a search for his brother, leading to Silent Hill after searching his hometown of Shepherd's Glen. That is, of course, as always, where we're going to stop with the discussion of the story. But I will say something I really appreciated about this game was sort of that it looks at some, like, PTSD kind of issues in terms of you know, the psychological aspect of the horror. You know, they very specifically wrote the story to have a lot of connections to previous Silent Hill games. It has connections to, you know, Silent Hill 1, certainly, and also Silent Hill 2.
And also the movie, I understand.
Yes, that is true. So, you know, it's sort of interesting that this game is sort of like a nexus point for other Silent Hills. But something that's really interesting during the development of the game is that Akira Yamaoka actually said in an interview that he was hoping that they would sort of stick with sort of the earlier Silent Hill game designs. And, you know, that he thought it would be interesting for the game to sort of look at not just, like, a fear based in, like, the unknown, but of, like, being tormented in broad daylight, which I think is a pretty interesting angle. You know, the game, once again, unfortunately, not nearly as deft a hand as some of the earlier Silent Hills. But, you know, still a fun game. It's generally not well loved by the Silent Hill fandom, but it was well received by the public and by games journalists and critics at the time. I expect this is due to the change in focus. You know, as the series of Silent Hill games became more action horror, you know, a lot of the people who are attracted to Silent Hill for its reputation of being, you know, the thinking man's horror game, I think a lot of those people began to sort of pull away from the Silent Hill series because of this and, you know, Origins and just the increasing focus on action and combat. We once again had music by Akira Yamaoka, as I mentioned. And once again, you know, Mary Elizabeth McGlynn did come to provide vocals for her music. The game has amazing sound design. If you can play this game in a dark room with a proper surround sound rig, it's actually still a really impressive experience. The sound design in this game is just nuts. And so, you know, that's something that's really cool. You know, so this is probably, in a lot of ways, one of the easier games in the series to still play if you're interested in it now. You can grab it on Steam. You can find copies on PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. If you live in North America, you have a GameStop by you. You can pick this up for so cheap. It's like $13 or something. So I think it's totally worth playing, even though it is, again, you can really see now that the series is sort of off the rails at this point.
It's the least Silent Hill-ish.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of ways in which that's true. Even though, again, you know, I thought they had some really good ideas there. I don't think they really gelled. I want to talk next about 2009's Wii release, Silent Hill Shattered Memories.
Yeah.
It was also ported to the PlayStation 2 and PlayStation Portable platforms in 2010. And it actually got a, the PS2 version got a PS2 Classics release in the EU. So that's pretty cool. This is, as we mentioned earlier, like a reboot slash reimagining of the first game. You once again play as Harry Mason. And, you know, this game, we've actually talked a lot about this game here on the show. I'm a huge fan of the way that, the game sort of has you talk to a therapist in the beginning, which makes you, as you're making choices in your therapy session, it impacts the way the game flows. The way that throughout the game sort of tracks how the order in which you do certain things to, like, subtly change little details in the game. And Slaggy, my understanding is that this is one you actually spent a fair bit of time with.
Yeah, I actually thought that, I played it on Wii, and I thought it was actually pretty great. Like, comparing it to the original Silent Hill, I was surprised that, what we're going to talk about next, Downpour, I think that they did a lot of things in that. It sounds like it almost was a return to its roots in a lot of way. There was a lot of puzzle solving, finding keys, but there weren't, like, without the clunky tank controls that, I'm gonna get some shit for that probably, but, for me it removed that barrier and allowed me to appreciate the, like, exploration and still having the same spooky atmosphere,
Yeah, absolutely. And they completely stripped combat out.
Yeah, you basically just have to shake zombies off stuff.
Yeah, which I think is actually really amazing. They removed the monsters from, rather than being like, oh, there are monsters everywhere and you have to kill them and find ammo they might drop. To going back to being like a scary thing lurking in the shadows so that when you see monsters, you might, rather than thinking, oh, how can I kill these things? You'll get back to sort of that first game frame of mind of like, I need to get the fuck out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And it absolutely works. We once again had Akira Yamaoka composing the music. And this was actually the first game in the series to really prominently also feature music that dynamically changed.
Right.
To sort of suit what was happening in the game. They did make some changes to the storyline. They made some changes to the fundamental way that the other world worked. But ultimately, I think that this is my favorite Silent Hill, I have to be honest. I've talked about that here on the show before, and it remains true. I played this game as recently as a year ago now, and I still love it. I think it's an amazing experience, and I think that this is a great game. I would love for this to get an HD port and be released alongside, Silent Hills or whatever. Because I would love for people to give this game a fair shake. I feel like most of the people who hate this game just hate it because it changed stuff and was a Wii game. Because everyone I know who's really played it and put a lot of time into it ended up loving it, myself included.
And if you are aware of the joke ending for this, I allowed myself to be spoiled by the joke endings, but this probably has one of the most bizarre joke endings of all of them, by which I mean hilarious. It wasn't the best received, was it?
Well, no, like I said, the game, it had some issues with the Silent Hill fandom, specifically really, like, not being happy that it was a reboot, a reimagining of the first game. But the funny thing is, pretty much all of the games writers at the time were just like, this is a genuinely disturbing, shocking game, a really interesting take on a formula that had gone stale. It's interesting because, the exploration sequences were very puzzle based. And then like the combat sequences, which are not combat sequences, they're just like running. Like you need to GTFO. You have no combat options. You just need to get away. And a lot of reviewers really felt like that was like really heart pounding. Like they would get really like scared and even like upset while playing that. But, a lot of fans weren't loving it, and, some reviewers did ding it for being like, oh, this is like a very clear divide in terms of game design, and it feels inorganic. But overall, I think that this is by far the best game of the series. And if I were a listener who hadn't played this game yet, I would probably be looking for a copy of this on Wii.
Wii!
I have to assume at this point it's probably going to start getting harder to find because it did not sell a ton of copies. But again, absolutely worth playing. Absolutely, I love it. I think it's a great game. And I highly, 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 more than any of the other games we've talked about here tonight, I highly recommend you check this game out.
Yeah, and I've never played it on the PS2, or you said it was also on PSP?
Yes.
But, I mean, for me, like, the motion controls just, like, work really well.
Yeah, they're really, really well integrated.
LOL.
And it's funny, because if you think about it in that way, this is another game that, like, oh, this is also reminiscent of PT. Because, you know, PT had some really interesting, like, I don't want to say gimmick, but gimmick integrations. And, you know, it also had very similar, like, there's some spooky stuff and you got no combat options. Like, you just need to figure your way to get out of these situations. So, absolutely, I'm a big, big, big fan of this game. I can't say it enough. Slaggy, unless you have anything to add, I want to talk about the last mainline Silent Hill game.
Nope, let's do it.
Last and probably least,
wah, wah, wah.
We have Silent Hill Downpour. This game was released for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 in early 2012, which that was not that long ago. You play as a prison inmate, Murphy Pendleton, once again in sort of a third-person Resident Evil 4-style view. And this game specifically, I thought, was the least story-focused. You know, there is a story, and it is like a bog-standard Silent Hill story, but this is really where the series, in the eyes of myself, and I think most of the Silent Hill fandom, this was like the absolute, like, jump to the shark moment. It was the first game in the series to be scored by someone other than Akira Yamaoka, and of course, for that reason, Mary Elizabeth McGlynn initially refused to come back to do more songs for the game. Ultimately, Tom Hewlett from Konami was able to convince her to come back and do vocals on a couple of songs, but most interestingly is that Downpour's main theme was actually performed by the new metal band Korn. Silent Hill Downpour, again, you know, there were some pretty cool ideas in terms of game design. The game featured a real-time weather system, and, you know, when it would rain, monsters would appear more frequently and they'd be more strong. There is a storyline reason for that, kind of. But again, you know, this game was, like, over the top with the violence and the gore and the edgy background story and repressed memories, and it's just really, in my opinion, it's just too much. Like, it's try hard. This game, they were just trying really hard to make a creepy, spoopy game, and I have to be honest, I think that they went so far that it became parody, and I just don't think it's very fun.
Well, boo.
Yeah.
That's a Silent Hill downer.
Yeah, it really is. I wouldn't really recommend checking this one out unless you're an obsessive who wants to play all of these games. I think this one is better left forgotten. And if I know you IRL, you're more than welcome to borrow or have my copy.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's, yeah. I mean, I think
Silent
Game
Hill
Informer...
downgrade.
I think Game Informer's review actually had it about right. I don't regret my time with Silent Hill Downpour, but mediocrity hung over most of my playthrough. Yeah, that's about it.
Ouch.
So, you know, there is, again, a very strong combat focus. There is some puzzle solving and some exploration, but it is primarily a combat game with side quests involving, you know, saving other people in the town you're in and, like, having, like, really obvious, like, moral choices along the lines of those dialogue wheels that we had been talking about earlier that Commander Shepard was dealing with. But it's all really obvious stuff. It's like, oh, let this person keep their ammo, or slaughter them and take their ammo. Like, there's not, like, a third option that is, like, barter with them, or take their ammo but vow to protect them. It's just like, no, be a good guy or be a dick. And it's just really transparent, and it's really
Yawn.
Clear. You know, obviously those choices do impact the ending and some of the events of the game, but it's so try-hard and transparent that, for me, I was never really able to get into this game and enjoy it. Slag McWaggy, do you have anything else to say before we start talking about some of the spin-offs and
nope,
other...
Nope, let's spin it off.
...other games? All right. Oh, goodness gracious, we've been recording almost 2 hours, so we need to step this up. So the first game I want to talk about here is the Silent Hill spin-off, Silent Hill Book of Memories. You know, and we actually, this game came out during the era of Game Buoy, so we've talked about this game. And, you know, I have to say, I think this is a game that is hated for all the wrong reasons. This was a Vita game released in 2012, developed by WayForward Technologies.
Yay, we like WayForward.
And it's basically, I think the reason why this game is hated is because it's not a Silent Hill game per se. It's really more like a dungeon crawler. You know, in the Diablo vein, you have different character classes, which are sort of themed from, like, teen archetypes of, like, the bookworm, the goth, the jock, the preppy, and the rocker, which you can actually customize as you level up and assign stats and pick up loot. It's, you know, it's a dungeon crawler based on Silent Hill. And, you know, I actually think it's really good at that. I think that it's really cool that the game has, like, an alignment system, based on, like, what kinds of weapons you use and what kinds of monsters you primarily focus on. You know, your karma meter will shift and you'll end up getting, you know, different abilities and different endings. And, you know, I also thought it was cool that, you know, some of the bosses in Book of Memories were, like, stuff like Pyramid Head or the ghosts that haunted the room. So, you know, I thought it was a really cute game. I think it's fun to play, but, you know, it is a little bit silly that they made a Silent Hill themed dungeon crawler. So, you know, I like it. I think it's fun, but your mileage may vary. It is definitely not a traditional Silent Hill game. And, you know, while there are, like, very light puzzles, they are very light puzzles. It's primarily a dungeon
crawl. I guess it sounds like the type of thing you'd expect, like, in the Final Fantasy franchise. Like, oh, just a rando spinoff in a totally different genre, but...
Yeah, exactly.
Because I get the impression that a lot of Silent Hill fans are very much purists, that this is, like, sacrilegious.
Absolutely. And, you know, the next game I would like to talk about here is, of course, P.T., and, you know, also Silent Hills to the degree that we can, but I think all we can really discuss is P.T.
Right, we don't really know anything about Silent Hills.
Yeah. P.T., of course, stands for Playable Teaser. Hey, they must have ripped us off on the episode title this week. And, you know, P.T. was terrifying. We've talked about it here. We've talked tonight about how the game definitely takes its cues from some of the more underappreciated Silent Hill games. Which, you know, I almost have to wonder if that's intentional on some level. Like, let's take most of our design cues from Shattered Memories and The Room, which are two super underappreciated Silent Hill games. Slaggy, you played P.T. Why don't you tell me, especially now that you've done a little bit of research into other Silent Hill games, why don't you tell me a little bit about what you think about how P.T. relates to other Silent Hills?
Well, like you said, there's no combat. It's about exploration and, you know... I guess, like, I haven't played The Room personally, but you're, you know, just going through the same house over and over, and it, like, appears in different permutations. Like, there'll be something, elements a little bit different, and that's really unsettling. So, I mean, it's like, you know, it takes the idea of, like, a familiar setting, which is supposed to be a place of comfort. It makes it very, very disturbing. We're talking, like, fetuses in sinks. We're talking,
But again, you know, that's keeping very much with Silent Hill tradition.
And the thing that really was unsettling to me is that, like, oh, you can go in the door this time, but then the next cycle through, you can't go in that door. And, oh, you can turn around in this time, but next time you turn around and there is a effing monster.
Lisa is the name of the ghost.
Who attacks you. You know, the thing that's really interesting is that Kojima-san said he's a scaredy cat. So he also, but then he said at the same time, there's a certain type of horror that only people who are scared of can create. So maybe it's something I can do. So it's really interesting to, you know, think of him as someone who is, you know, kind of terrified about what the types of things he's creating, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, of course, you know, I really think that having Guillermo del Toro is really significant. I mean, I see a lot of things happening here. I see it returning to its Japanese roots, definitely, with bringing in Kojima Productions. I see, you know, it acknowledging, again, its roots in, you know... just like the horror and mystery literature and cinema by bringing in Del Toro.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I think it's really trying to be a mindful return to... I can't say it's going to be a return to form because we have no idea. We can only assume. But, you know, I was terrified. I was very unsettled playing it. And you made me play it in a dark room. And you didn't warn me about anything. And I screamed. But I mean, I guess that means it's successful. It's not, I'm a little worried that I won't be able to handle Silent Hills because it really unsettled me to play PT. But I mean, I guess success. You know, the PT we had talked about had over 1 million downloads. So, I mean, definitely, people are definitely hungry for what this has to offer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's also a handful of Silent Hill games that unfortunately have never come out to North America. I have no real knowledge of them. I can't really talk about them authoritatively. I can't say that word.
Authoritatively?
Yeah, I think that's it. but, you know, there was stuff like a Silent Hill Play Novel.
Actually, I thought was a really interesting concept.
Yeah, yeah. It's a Game Boy Advance game, and it basically retells the story of the first Silent Hill as a visual novel style game. So, you know, that's fascinating. Of course, there's also a series of mobile phone games, both Silent Hill The Escape and Silent Hill Orphan 1 through 3. My understanding...
There's something wrong with Esther.
my understanding is that these games are pretty good as, you know, phone games of that era go. But, you know, unfortunately, since I haven't played them, I don't really want to talk about them too much. But overall, you know, that's the Silent Hill series. We're big fans here in the studio. Again, you know, we're not such mega fans that we're going to tell you stuff about, like, oh yeah, the school in the first Silent Hill game is modeled on the kindergarten from Kindergarten Cop.
Except you just did.
But, well, I mean, yeah, I know that for the first game, but I don't know all of these cool things about the other games. So again, I really implore any of our listeners who know cool stuff about Silent Hill, please, please, please reach out, let us know. I'm a huge fan of the series, and actually I'd love to get into it further. I would love to be more into Silent Hill than I am now, because I think it's great. I absolutely love it. And it's definitely one of those games that I wish were mega popular. I think this game, this series of games, should be more popular than the Resident Evil series. And I think it's a crime that it's not.
Boo.
You know, obviously we'd be remiss not to mention, you know, like the stuff like the Silent Hill light novels in Japan. There have been a series of Silent Hill comic books here in North America, published by IDW. Of course, there were also manga in Japan. And of course, there was the Silent Hill movies, Silent Hill and Silent Hill Revelation.
Fun fact, Revelation has Sean Bean and Kit Harington in it.
Oh my gosh. Do they die?
Probably.
no, you know, I say that, but I know the answer.
Sean Bean always dies.
Yeah. You know, I had wanted to talk about some of these, other media stuffs a little more, because there's also, like, this really weird, like, PSP, UMD disc called the Silent Hill Experience.
Oh, yeah, I read about
it
that.
It was, like, a collection of some of the IDW Silent Hill comics, as well as, like, soundtrack excerpts and some cool little, like, behind-the-scenes bonuses.
So basically be like something you would have seen on a, what did they call those? Enhanced CDs?
Yeah, kind of. Konami did one for Metal Gear Solid as well, as I recall.
Oh.
Yeah. So that was the thing that they were really trying to do, was try to leverage sort of that kind of content on the PSP, I guess. And Silent Hill and Metal Gear Solid are where it's at for Konami. Because, you know, they don't acknowledge Castlevania.
Oh.
But anyway, you know, we've actually already crossed the 2-hour mark, so I think rather than focus too much on this other media, we're just gonna have to kick it forward. So, Slaggy, yeah. why don't we wrap up? Why don't you talk a little bit about why the Silent Hill series is special in your eyes?
Well, I think that, you know, even when it has sidestepped its original vision, it's always tried to bring something different to the survival horror genre. And, you know, it's really tried to think about character and story and, you know, even when it wasn't as successful in its execution. And I think it's, you know, it's had a lot of, you know, and I think what we were talking about that, you know, most of the characters are just kind of like an everyman or everywoman, you know, that really allows the player to step into their shoes. Less so with the ones with super, like, combat bro training, but, you know, in its truest essence, it's terrifying because you can relate. Instead of being like, oh, I'm a super zombie bro soldier, Chris Redfield police officer dude.
I'm a member of STARS. But yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. And, you know, that actually ties into my own answer to that, which is, you know, that I love the way that Silent Hill, especially those core four games plus Shattered Memories, I love the way that they handle psychological horror and are almost more like character studies on what trauma does to the human psyche. And you know, some of these games, they involve violence and abuse of various kinds, mm-hmm. and baggage from childhood. And I just think it's really interesting using gaming, which is an interactive medium, in a different way than you would use like a movie to tell this story.
Right.
You know, there's something like as terrifying as a good psychological horror film can be, you know, Jacob's Ladder or something.
Right, a huge influence, Silent Hill.
Oh, absolutely. It really does get stepped up to the next level when you are literally being chased down a hall by a literal
Pyramid Head?
Personification of rage and guilt issues that you've left lingering since, you know, you
Daddy.
Did something you regretted. I absolutely love the way that Silent Hill sort of breaks the barrier between a typical, like, sort of narratological and ludological design, because, again, this is really a game that is equal parts story and game.
Yeah, and you're one who typically does not, like, story is one of the least concerning parts for you in a game.
Well, exactly, and that's why the Silent Hill series for me is the exception that proves the rule. This is the series that I can use as my litmus test, sort of, for, like, I know I don't care about story in games, because on the rare occasion that they're done this well, it stands out to me. Mm-hmm. And that tells me that in most games, the story, such as it is of such little meaning that it's not even worth considering. Like, Silent Hill for me is, like, the rare exception that makes me see, like, man, why am I messing with the story in Resident Evil? There's no point to this. There's no deep issues of the human experience being explored.
Well, I mean,
like, artistic communication happening here.
And I think you look at
Silent Hill is art.
I think you look at the influences, like Stephen King, David Lynch, both of which you are big fans of.
Absolutely.
Both of whom, pardon me.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, in case you can't tell, we are big fans of this series here in the studio. I highly recommend you check these games out. And now that we both said our final piece, it's actually time to move on to a lighter topic. I hear we have some under the radar news in
Rumor Has It. Rumor Has It. Rumor Has It. Rumor Has It.
So this is almost a follow-up, Rumor Has It. Over on Silicon Era, they had been reporting, you know, that Spike Chunsoft was trying to find a Western publisher for the Attack on Titan 3DS game, and the Australian Classification Board, you know, that source of lots of good rumors, has listed Atlas USA as publisher.
Yeah, that is fascinating. And of course, you know, it's not that surprising. We have seen Nipponichi and Atlas both utilize their USA / Northern America branches to publish in European and other territories. So the interesting thing to me, of course, is just that if Atlas USA is doing this, and we have every indication that they are, I think it also tracks that we will probably see a North American release of this game.
I just have to say that it's probably overdue for me to watch Attack on Titan, because I have no idea what's going on with the naked giants. Are those the Titans?
Yes.
They kind of terrify me.
If you can get past the first 5 episodes, you'd probably be really into it.
Yeah, because, like, those naked Japanese giant men make me, they just give me a big Choaniki vibe.
I actually, you know, they actually, when I first started watching it, they made me very uncomfortable. There's just something unsettling and almost like uncanny valley-like in some way.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the screenshot on Silicon Area and I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, it just makes me uncomfortable. But anyway, that'll be great. You know, I've heard mixed things about the game. Some people think it's really awful and some people think it's a great time. I just hope that if this game is coming out in North America and Australia, that it will be the improved release we've talked about here on the show coming out in Japan pretty soon now, which includes things like online multiplayer and more character customization options. We also did have a article that we wanted to point out in our segment previously known as Smash.
Mm-hmm.
This was a piece that ran on Newsweek that we have very strong feelings about. But unfortunately, you know, Slagkick here has some concerns in his professional life about the way that a certain internet movement is persecuting people that speak against it. And so I'm going to respect his wishes, and we're not going to link or discuss this article directly. Those of you who are curious, I'm sure can figure out what we're talking about and find it.
Yeah.
With all that having been said, why don't we talk about
I said, hey, what's going on?
Hey, Captain Spike, what you been playing?
Borderlands, the pre-sequel.
Have you?
No, I actually
have. I've heard great things about it, though.
I have, too, and I will definitely pick it up this Steam sale for this holiday in, gosh, next month now.
Whoa.
For now, I actually already have a full plate. I've been playing Legend of Korra, which is, of course, one of the two Platinum Games games that came out this week.
Yes. How do you like it? Because I know, what was it, Polygon, that was not very impressed with it at all.
Well, let me put it to you like this. The big complaint most people have is that Legend of Korra, the animation series, has a huge cast of men of well-beloved characters and an incredible story spanning generations. And the game Legend of Korra has a couple of poorly animated cutscenes in between levels to give you a setting and a conflict to be playing. So if you're the kind of person who cares about story and that sort of thing, the game drops the ball pretty hard. If you like combat, it is awesome! It definitely plays like a fusion of Bayonetta and Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Oh, wow.
It definitely, in a lot of ways, feels like an entry-level character action game, but it does have a really nice difficulty curve. You know, you can play through the core game in 4 or 5 hours. It's a $15 download game. I'm very happy with it. I think the Platinum magic is definitely there in terms of the game systems. I saw a lot of people online.
All the boys and girls who love Korra can get their first taste of Platinum.
Well, exactly. And I'm seeing a lot of people online complaining about, like, oh, the timing windows for the dodges are really, really tight. It's so strict and punishing. You really don't get a lot of points if you don't do good combos and you get hit a lot.
Would they rather it be DMC Devil May Cry?
And when you don't get good combos and good points, you can't buy character upgrades. But to me, it's like those are fundamental parts of the design of a character action game. Sometimes you have to replay levels in order to get enough points to buy the new move you want. Like, that's how that genre is designed. And I love that genre. I find that style of play and that kind of character progression very appealing. I love tight timing windows on my dodges and parries and counters. I'm super into it. I love it. And I think that if you like those kinds of games, that you would be into it.
Sounds great.
I've also got about 4 hours in on Fantasy Life, as I mentioned
Yay!
Earlier.
A lot of people talking about Fantasy Life over on the internets.
Yeah, you know, to me, it most seems like the original version of Dragon Quest IX that was supposed to release.
Oh, really?
You may recall, of course, Dragon Quest IX was originally supposed to be a little more open world and have, like, a real-time multiplayer battle system. But ultimately, there was huge fan backlash, and it ended up becoming a more stereotypical, Dragon Quest game. It's almost hard for me to think anything other than that Level 5, after finishing Dragon Quest IX with Square Enix, went off and did Fantasy Life with the ideas that they had from that original version of Dragon Quest IX. Because when you consider that it looks the way it does, it plays the way it does, it has a very similar story to a Dragon Quest game, it just, to me, is one of those things where it's like, this really, like, I almost think it must be a direct result of wanting to make that game and having had such fan backlash that they couldn't make it.
Yeah, and I mean, I've heard it described as Dragon Quest meets Animal Crossing.
So that's probably true on some level, but the Animal Crossing elements are not pronounced.
Oh, okay.
It's definitely more Dragon Quest. But again, the cool thing is it's almost like a primarily single player MMO. You can be any of the classes in the game and you can switch more or less at will. And like, for example, I have been maining like woodcutter and miner and blacksmith, and I haven't really been doing much combat classes. And I've just been having a lot of fun just like grinding out my professions and searching for loot in order to make better weapons, using my professions, my jobs, my life, whatever terminology you want to use.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really enjoying it. I think it's super addictive and it's super fun. It's
good
super
job,
pleasant.
Level 5.
Yeah.
I feel like Level 5 is one of those studios that
got a level up.
I was just saying that, you know, we talk about their titles a lot, But I feel like they haven't even hit their heyday yet. Like, I feel like that's a studio that over the next few years we're going to see people be like, wow. I mean, that being said, you know, a lot of people really love Ni No Kuni. I know that it wasn't really for you.
Yeah, no, but I definitely recognize it as high quality. You know, it wasn't my thing, but it is a tremendous game.
Yeah, and you know, of course, their experience, Professor Layton series.
I'm a big fan of the Inazuma 11 series. We've talked about that here on the show. Obviously, the Yo-Kai Watch series is huge.
Yeah, and you like Jeanne d'Arc for PSP, right?
Yeah, yeah. And of course, we also have, you know, all of the Guild 01 games that we're big fans of here at Game Buoy.
We might have to do a level 5 episode at some point.
Man, I don't even think about some of this stuff sometimes. They did stuff, you know, like White Knight Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Cloud, which is great. I love Dark Cloud. Rogue Galaxy for the PlayStation 2, really underappreciated game. Yeah, I wasn't really thinking about it, Slaggy, but level 5 is great.
Right? I feel like they're kind of not on everyone's radar, but most definitely should be.
And last, but certainly not least, is Civilization Beyond Earth.
Yes.
This is, of course, the newest Civ game. We've talked about it a lot here on the show. Takes place in space. And I just have to say, if you like Civ 5, you're going to love Civ Beyond Earth.
Now, it plays enough until, like, 3 a.m., right?
Yes. It plays enough like Civ 5 that you can jump right in.
But with
enough new and fresh twists that it also has that feeling of, like, new ideas and new systems to learn and a new, like, optimal tech tree.
That's funny
because... It's just great. I love that
feeling. That's exactly how I would describe it, you know, like... The controls is like, oh, you know, go settle. Where do you want to settle? Your new settlement? What do you want to research? But, you know, I've only played a little bit just to kind of get my feet wet in it. But, you know, all of the new victory types and the way the tech tree works and just the variety of worlds. Like, I'm really excited to learn. And I think that's what probably for Access was so excited about. Remember, you know, the team of two younger gentlemen who kind of spearheaded the development of this. Is that it does take the, what I can tell already, is it take the, you know, elements of Civ, but without the constraints of, you know, history, I guess, because, you know, like, we think of, oh, you got Gandhi, he's the peaceful one, but, you know, like, we don't know what these new nations are like.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like uncharted territory, and I'm loving it.
So, as you could tell, I played a little bit of Civilization Beyond Earth, and I actually have also still been playing World of Warcraft. The 6.0.2 patch just hit with the content preparing for the new Warlords of Draenor expansion and the new character models, which were very shocking to see at first, but actually, you know, now that I've gotten a chance to get used to them, kind of had to maybe look through a couple different options and change some hairstyles that didn't quite look right. I'm living with them fine. And, you know, overall, I'm not having that difficult of a time compared to some people who are just like, oh, this is bad, healing's broken. Like, I on my healer right now, healing feels fine. So, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to the new expansion coming in just a couple weeks now. Like,
two or three weeks.
But, you know, and I'm kind of just not stressing out anymore about trying to get the legendary. I acknowledge that I came back to the game way too late to really get in any, legwork on that. So, you know, I'm just trying to, have some fun. I just, took advantage of the character services sale to bring the warlock that I had boosted on another server over to my main server. So that's pretty cool because I really like playing Destruction Warlock. So that means I have 4 level 90s now. Not sure which one is going to go to 100 first, but, you know, I have definitely some choices. Also did something kind of controversial and, with the new ability to undelete characters, cleared up my characters on my main server and deleted like a character or two.
Oh, wow.
One of them was an extra warlock that I don't need, and then a warrior. So, like, you know, I just kind of, you know, figured I would get rid of the clutter And if I ever regret it, I can undelete them. Thanks, Blizzard. Other than that, looking forward to picking up Bayo2 after Payday.
I want to just mention, the only reason I didn't talk about Bayo2 tonight is that, unfortunately, Amazon isn't shipping my copy until Monday.
Rude.
Right? So as soon as I have it, I mean, you all are going to just have to hear about it for like 20 darn minutes.
Yeah, but Bayo2 is definitely my priority. You know, it's just as tough because this was a big week for releases, and a couple of weeks from now is going to be a big week for releases with Smash. I'm actually not sure which version of Smash I should get. I'm almost wondering.
So you should get both so that you get the free Mewtwo DLC, and also so that you get the physical CD soundtrack rewards.
That's true, but I was just thinking that if I'm mostly playing, although there's online battles too, so, you know, I probably will, but, you know, money, lol.
I do respect that.
But, you know, I still need to get to playing Hyrule Warriors, which I'm really excited to play. So it's just, there's so many good games out right now, and, you know, that it's exciting, but I'm kind of like, ugh, what am I gonna do first? So, I guess, first world problems. Anything else that you've been playing?
No, I think that's about it. I got a new iPad, so I'll have a lot of new iPad games to talk about next week.
Cool! Alright, with that, I think we're ready to move on to our social link. So, we always like to remind you that at any time, you can interact with us with our social links. You can always tweet us at @gamebuoy.org. The .org is spelled D-O-T-O-R-G.
@gamebuoy.org. The .org is spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
And that can be answers to old questions of the week, just saying hello, whatever you want.
Speaking of, in fact, we have a backlog Betty that sent us a rather enormous email.
Oh. So, you know, I think I will save that treat for last.
Okay.
And I'm just going to start with some general feedback.
All right.
And actually, this will be kind of tying into our special mail buoy mail, because it comes from Twitter user Poitnarf, saying, I'm finally done going through the entire GameBuoy.org archive. You guys are awesome hearts. Aww.
Oh, thank hearts. You. You're awesome.
And Garrett, a.k.a. Poitnarf, responded to lots of our social links via mail buoy, so a backlog bro, Betty, babe, whatever you want to call yourself, so we're looking forward to that. We got a tweet from Yumi Games a while back saying, when is the episode coming out? My ears are missing you guys.
Aww.
And that happened to be on the day that we were posting episode 65, An Ancient Evil Approaches. And then Yumi Games replied, yay, my morning just got better.
Aww.
# GameBuoy Extra from Happy Natto, a.k.a. Daniel T. Slagkick has made all those jokes before, but I still giggle every time. Oh, you. Your Enzyme said, finally got around to listening to episode 65. I love horror games, even if I can barely get over my scaredy catness.
Aww.
I feel that. Also asking, I can't remember, did y'all talk about the Corpse Party games last year? You have to play them if you haven't. So good. You know, I can't remember if we talked about them during our spoopy episode, but we've definitely mentioned Corpse Party.
We better have. Holy cats. I love those games.
I don't remember
games.
If we talked about them during our spoopy episode, but we've talked about Corpse Party a lot throughout the
well,
various
episodes. A listener basically just told us that we haven't said enough, so we will have to change that.
Corpse Party Party.
Corpse Party Party.
Over on Facebook, we also got some feedback from episode 65 from Daniel T, saying, I've been replaying Parasite Eve 2 this week thanks to this episode, and I had the strangest realization. The creatures, the setting, and the story aren't the things that scare me, but rather it's the encounter screen. No matter where I am, I jump every time that heartbeat sounds. Screen goes to black and white. So weird. Ooh, that's spoopy.
Yeah.
For our social links question of the week, we asked, this week the Creeptacular continues as we discuss the Silent Hill series. Are you a fan? Which game is your favorite? Over on Twitter, we got a lot of great responses. Gamer Fox says, I've never personally played any, but watched my friend go through most of them. Definitely some scary shiz, screaming emoji. Actually, that emoji was there. Atari Barbie said 2 through 4. I'm an avid fan. The music by Yamaoka is some of the best music survival horror has heard to date. Mary Elizabeth McLean is a goddess. And Gamer Fox says, I have to agree with that. Yamaoka is a genius. ActDef says, I'm a fan of the original and SH2, but The Room also holds a really close place to my heart. A really underrated game. And Atari Barbie says, here's a lullaby to close your eyes. It was always you that I despised. Room of Angel, yes! And one more little tidbit that I probably should have mentioned separately, but a recent little tidbit. Remy LeBeau, over on Twitter said, can't wait for VG Realness, GameBuoy.org, and Koopa Club to talk about Bayonetta 2 for Wii U, hashtag Hunty Bunch. And Happy Natto said, amen. Every time I get a new game, I get excited to hear everyone gush over them.
Aw.
Well, definitely look forward to us talking about Bayonetta 2 in our next episode, I expect. On Facebook, we had the Facebook bonus question, which was, we talked a bit about PT already, but we want to hear about it from you from a little different angle this week. What part of PT's design do you hope to get in the final version of the next Silent Game? So for some of these are, you know, responses to the main question, and also including the Facebook bonus. Francisco Yu says, OMG, Silent Hill 2 is the only one I played, but I absolutely love it. I didn't play the game until 2007, but holy crap, did scare the shit out of me. My favorite part of the game, though, was the music. I fell in love with the soundtrack and would frequently fall asleep listening to it because I found it very relaxing. As for PT, I really liked the mindfuckery of the demo the most. I wanted that to stay around. Playing PT, it tapped into something that made me feel fear like the fear I experienced as a 9-year-old. Hashtag make the nightmare stop.
Nice.
Renee A. from the Killer Queens from Outer Space podcast says, my favorite series, but ironically, I have not played all the series entries. Huh.
No, you better change that, girl.
Yeah. I thought Castlevania was all-time favorite. Anyway, however, my favorite entry is Silent Hill 2. This game did a very good job developing its characters and giving a level of symbolism and meaning to its creatures instead of just being big, scary monsters. Well put. I think that's something that you touched on a lot, too, with Pyramid Head and such. Colin M. said, let's get this out of the way, Silent Hill 2. For the bonus question, I would like them to stick to self-contained levels. Instead of exploring the town of Silent Hill, why not explore select locations and a first-person view with puzzles and no combat? They could throw in some light stealth occasionally while escaping the occasional boss baddie. I could see PT being episodic, with each location level being an episode. The story can be told through multiple perspectives, and only person who knows the full story behind the events of PT would be the player, who was able to see things from different viewpoints. Wow, that's actually a really great concept.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, you know, I'm almost gonna be upset now if that's not what Silent Hills is.
Right? Colin M. also says, also, no more love for Google Plus. Frown. We got the Google Plus question of the week up a little late this week, sorry. Colin is our one, like, devoted G Plus follower.
I'm sure we have others, don't single him out.
Well, thank you, Colin, for being the one consistently reply on Google Plus. Hearts. And last but certainly not least, Daniel T. says, I have only really played Silent Hill 3 and Book of Faces, I mean Book of Memories, which isn't Silent Hill good, but is a very interesting mishmash of creepy setting and dungeon crawling. Silent Hill 3 really blew me away between the way Heather grows throughout the game, the very tragic relationships she developed, and the killer soundtrack.
Yes!
My primary exposure to Silent Hill has been the movies. I went to see both on release. The first had me gripping in terror. The first had me gripping my seat terror from beginning to end, and the second did an incredible job of recreating the character of Heather on screen. They clearly have flaws when compared to the games. They are certainly among the better movie adaptations of video games. Finally, my favorite thing...
I definitely agree with that statement with regard to the first movie.
Finally,
the second one is, you know, but the first one, definitely amazing.
Finally, my favorite theme from PT was the Silent Hill staple of returning to an area and seeing subtle changes. Above all else, the scene in Silent Hill 3 that set my overactive imagination into motion was the room that, upon leaving and hearing a scream, then contains a decapitated mannequin.
Yes!
So long as the game keeps me on edge and slightly disoriented like that, it'll have me searching the internet for pictures of kittens before I can sleep.
Aww.
And with that, that goes for our questions of the week. And for some
great responses,
vintage,
guys. Thank you.
Thank you. For some vintage questions of the week, we got an email from Garrett, aka PointNarf, saying lots of social links. And Garrett is someone who has been going through all the Hunty Bunch podcast from the beginning. Bless your heart.
Bless your heart. I couldn't even listen to some of those early Game Buoy episodes at this point.
Right? Well, it's notable that the earliest one references episode 27. I don't blame you. So I recently finished going through the entire Game Buoy archive, and I have some social links answers. Episode 64. I did not get an N64 at launch. I don't think I've ever gotten a game console at launch. Also, making a list of my favorite N64 games is hard. Star Fox 64, Diddy Kong Racing, Ogre Battle 64, Super Mario 64, Ocarina of Time, and WWF No Mercy top my list. Probably in that order.
Yeah.
Not surprised about the WWF. Garrett is one of the hosts of Table Ladders and Podcast, a wrestling podcast. Episode 50, my favorite rare game is probably Donkey Kong Country. That's one of the few games I just keep playing until I have completed everything in the game. When you're a kid with more time than games, there aren't many non-RPG SNES games better than this one. Episode 42, my favorite Pokemon game is Soul Silver. After years of not playing Pokemon, this got me back into the series. My favorite Pokemon is Magnezone. In Black, I caught a Magnemite in the Dream World, and shortly after, it fully evolved into Magnezone. That Pokemon stuck with me through the rest of the game. My Magnezone, whirring as it came out of its Dream Ball, is just something that sticks in my head. That probably sounds silly, but whatever.
Aww.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I don't think that sounds silly at all.
No, I'm just looking at the next one. Episode 40. I've never played any Sonic game, so outside of Smash Brothers, my only real exposure is the ABC Saturday morning cartoon, which I watched whenever I could. And then he said that he still remembers half the lyrics to the song. Sonic the Hedgehog. I loved Sonic Sat AM. We were initially, we still have a Game Buoy Micro.
Yeah, we'll be doing a Game Buoy Micro on Sonic after Sonic Boom comes out.
Yeah.
Because we still have some talking points to hit on the Sonic train.
Oh, do we ever. Gotta go fast.
Keep moving.
I gotta go fast. Episode 35, my favorite Disney game is Kingdom Hearts. I never got into the series as a whole, but that first game was my favorite PS2 game. Nearly everything about that game was great, except Sephiroth, fuck him. Episode 33, my first rhythm game was Karaoke Revolution. Does that count? Hell yes, it does. Which I played in college. Some friends and I in the dorms, we get together in the common room and play until we got noise complaints. Aw. Later on in college, a friend got Rock Band, and that's easily my favorite rhythm game series.
Yes.
The weekly tabletop gaming night on campus, Rock Band would be the one video game that was accepted there. Episode 27, fighting games have always been difficult for me. I am quite bad at them. Oh, I can't even reliably do something simple like quarter circle punch. So my favorite fighting game series is Smash Brothers. All you need for that game is a button and a direction. It's so simple, I can do it. Aww. By the way, I listen to podcasts at somewhere between 1.3 and 2x speed. When at 2x speed, you say, MailBoyGameBoy.org. It's just silly.
MailBoyGameBoy.org. MailBoyGameBoy.org. MailBoyGameBoy.org.
You guys are awesome. Make more episodes. I need more. Garrett, aka Point.
Thank you so much for that entire email.
And thank you for, like, the... What are we at now? 66 times, like... So, basically 180 hours or so of podcast listening. But I guess at 2x speed, you would need that for catching up with the entire archive. But thank you, and thank all of you out there for your continued support. We love your feedback. We like your iTunes rating, subscriptions, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes. We fucking
like
love
the likes.
Twitter.
Love Twitter.
You can tumble with us on Tumblr, plus one us on Google+. Email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And of course, everything from our social links to our entire episode archive is over at gamebuoy.org. Excuse me.
Gamebuoy.org.
Thank you. I was surprised you didn't jump on that. So what you can jump on is these shout-outs.
As ever and always, I'd like to shout out to Koopa Club. That's Koopa with a Q and Club with a K. Koopa Club is an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. I'd be remiss not to mention VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, as well as the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore. Of course, I must point you in the direction of Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I take ever so many of my cues. Last, but certainly not least within the gaming realm, is the Nintendo Fun Club, platformers, positivity, and pop punk. Of course, if we are going to talk about non-gaming podcasts, the first thing I'd direct you toward is Slagkick's show Reading is Fundamental. This is the currently off-season weekly podcast about RuPaul's Drag Race, where we talk about the most current episodes and talk a little bit about what we think about the Queen's progress from week to week. We do this show with Delvin from VG Realness, as well as with Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio. Of course, I also want to mention the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, the Star Trek podcast You Hope Doesn't Fail. And last, but most certainly not least, is X Nation over at culturalwormhole.blogspot.com, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. Now, Slaggy McWaggy, wanna take us to a game bar?
Game Bar is the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. It's a part of the Hunty Bunch, and basically the gay video game Prairie Home Companion. Theatrical version starring Lindsay Lohan. Nerdgas Network is the wildest shock shock video game radio show you'll ever come across. It's a bag of hot dicks. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, that's vognetwork.com, you can listen to great shows such as Horde House, the place for all things online gaming but never too seriously, and Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. And last but certainly not least, I'd like to shout out to La Palanca Podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español. As ever and always, our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to recreate Zelda music in beautiful symphonic sound. We will forever be pouring out a 40 for them.
As ever and always, I want to thank you all out there in Internet Radio Land for spending this late Saturday night / early Sunday morning with us.
Well, they're not necessarily spending the time with us. They could be listening at work or whatever.
We hope that you have enjoyed listening as much as we have enjoyed talking. We really look forward to November and December. We have some fun shows coming up for you, including a much-requested retrospective.
Ooh.
But until we get there, keep gaming, keep thinking, and look at me, I'm burning. But, I...
Baby crawlers!
Oh my god, news!
Oh, it's Google Glass, but I like saying Google Goggles. You better watch your Google Glass, because the Google Nexus Game Player...
They're gonna kick your ass!
What?
Go for it, man!
Hold on to your Google Goggles. Ouya and Fire TV... We have some nudes. We do not have nudes. Actually, we do have some nudes, but they're from, Custer's Revenge and stuff.
Do you have any bell sound effect in Silent Hill? Or should I do that?
What bells sound like in your world?
It's like a booby bell.
Are you just about ready?
Yeah.